You've tapped or clicked in to College Volleyball Weekly on Viral Volley Media. Now here's your host, Rob on mic.
Hey, good day, everyone, and welcome back to episode 14 of College Volleyball Weekly Men's Top 20 Insanity. There's only 2 weekends left. And on screen, we've got Dan Friend of Lewis, Jay Hossick of George Mason, and Theo Edwards of CSUN. And we almost had a non-elephant in the room episode with Brad Rothschatter coming in late on April Fool's Day. But before he got on, the great conversation was, well, maybe Brad isn't going to come on because he's the only one that didn't get a win this week. Ouch.
Great. That was great. Yeah, I can see you. Fools or something nice after that, Rob.
Gross salt.
And that's all right, Rob. You've lost everybody on the screen. So, you know, we're just going out there. So
so brutal. And that's why we're grumpy old men. It's no longer a movie. It's now a podcast and a YouTube channel. So, hey, let's start with our elephant in the room segment with the guys in action this week. And most of us went 1-1 on the week. Some went 0-2, but you know, for the most part, Jay's the only one that came out unscathed. So let's start with him.
I don't know if unscathed is the word I would choose, but it was a great weekend nonetheless for us. I'll talk about the rest of the IVA, then I'll talk about us. Penn State beat Harvard twice, one sweep and 1-3-1. It still remains number one in the EIVA with undefeated in conference record. And NJIT split the weekend, got their first conference win against Charleston, which was nice for them to finally get a win in the books. Charleston's a dangerous team, and they're proving that there's somebody you really don't want to face later on down the line. We look at the Friday night match for us against Sacred Heart. That was a trap match, and it wasn't planned for obvious reasons, but it was definitely a trap match for us. It was against Sacred Heart, who we had already beaten earlier this year. And, you know, our guys knew the night after was going to be the big match for us that we were focused on. However, you know, we came out of it on the other side fairly unscathed. It was a 3-1 victory over a good Sacred Heart team who there's going to be some press coming out this week about it, but good things are happening in Sacred Heart. And, you know, they're renovating their gym. They're going to get some full scholarship allotment, which is going to be greatly needed and appreciated. That team for years has had very little to no scholarship money to give. They were kind of one of those teams that just, you know, kind of flew under the radar for so many years. But I think they're going to be a team that in 2, 3, 4 years is going to be someone that is going to be really a good program. So hats off to Adam and those guys. But Saturday night was the big match for us. Princeton was ranked 15th. We were ranked 19th. It was a match that had major implications going forward for the EIVA. And Princeton had beaten us pretty soundly earlier on in the year in three. In our defense at that time, we were pretty banged up. We had a backup setter playing opposite. We had a couple of backup guys playing other positions for guys that were banged up. But we just didn't have the firepower then. But last Saturday proved to be a different story. And we came out victorious in five in front of a pretty good crowd in the rack. It was a really fun match to be a part of. You know, it's two teams that, you know, are pretty evenly matched. You know, both have firepower at the pins. They both got some good middles. And, you know, the setters are really good. And it was just a really fun match to be a part of. And, you know, I was proud of my guys for the way that they held their composure and just kept fighting and kept siding out. And, you know, I think at one point we sided out at 94% in game four, which is really good. But, you know, it just gives us the chance now to still control our own destiny. So we're happy about that. And we got a big couple of matches this weekend, senior weekend, alumni weekend. We're playing Harvard two times, and they're in third place in the EIVA. And it's going to be some good momentum for us going into the final weekend against Penn State. So we're excited to get after it this weekend.
Well, Jay, just some follow-up questions for you. Didn't Omar Hoyos have a milestone match in one of the matches this weekend? I thought I saw social where he had some accomplishment beyond the 1,000 kills, or was that it, the 1,000 kills?
Well, I believe he now took over 10th place or 10th spot in the all-time kills list. for George Mason, which is awesome. And now he's going to be in the record books and be, you know, talked about forever. But he's still got some matches to go. He can move up another spot or two and continue to leave his mark here. But yeah, Omar had a good weekend. I think against Princeton, Omar had 14 kills at 294. Had a couple of service aces, couple of blocks. You know, he's doing some good things for us. So we're excited for him and us moving forward.
Well, it was a battle of the snipers because you had Ben Harrington, who leads the nation in aces, with going up against Omar, which I didn't realize he is ninth in the nation in aces.
Yeah, no, people, you know, they overlook some teams, and that's okay. I mean, it is what it is. He doesn't care too much about those accolades, but you know, Omar can hit in the low 70s, and so can Harrington, and that's, you know, that's a speed that not a lot of people can hit. And when it comes at you, you know, 5 to 8 miles an hour faster, you know, if your platform's not ready to go, it could create some havoc. So he's doing some nice things.
Sounds good. Anyone have any questions for Jay and the EIVA?
Yeah, I got some stuff to add. I thought this match was age versus the academics. And, you know, I think someone on Volley Talk did a collective and looked at the combined age of George Mason, found out it was 250 years old when you add all the seven starters together.
Oh, that was just Jay.
No. Hi. You add Jay in there, now you're pushing the 400s. That's
well played, sir. Well played.
Well, it might be their whole coaching staff age-wise, too, just so you
know. Yeah. No, but I was
keep it coming.
I gotta throw Peluso some love. You know, he's up the age bracket of your coaching staff. You know what I mean?
Well, Vic Talamoa is our age as well. So you got three guys in their low 50s. It's there's a little bit of wisdom there if you want to say that.
Okay,
no kidding. And some Ben Gay, baby.
Well, and you guys still have more hair up top than Sam Swiesky. So, you know. So, but in all seriousness, I thought it was an awesome match. You know, George Mason down 2-1 comes to life. And really, to me, in watching the match, it was on the heels of Omar Hoyas. You know, in the fourth set, he went on a serving run that absolutely lit a fire under the team and brought him back to life. And, yeah, I mean, they kind of took over that match. And then again, in the fifth set, Omar Hoyas goes back to serve. I think it's like 9-all or 10-9, something like that. And he goes on another run to give them a big gap. And, you know, George Mason secures a couple of really, really key blocks and closes out that match at home. And really, really great win for George Mason and for Jay.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to give, before anybody else says anything, if they do, I got to give Colin Heath some love. The kid hit 12 kills. 500 for the match, was really good behind the service line, good with the reception. And, you know, Colin's a kid that maybe is not underneath the bright lights, so to speak, but as a role player, he did a really, really nice job. We had four kids that hit over double digit kills, and, you know, our setter distributed the ball really well. Troy ran a great offense. So just got to give a little love to those guys. Total team win by you guys.
Yeah. Colin Heath stood out to me, just like whenever he got his opportunity, he was killing it. What? Almost every single time it felt like watching that match. So he was big in big moments. And then Sam Peters was the middle offensively that really stood out to me for you guys, that really kept your balance and kept Princeton honest.
Yeah, Peters, 12 kills, hitting 600, four block assists. I thought Brad was throwing up his arms because he grabbed his player of the week or something, but yeah.
No, that hasn't happened quite yet.
He's usually the one that does it in the first 5 minutes. So. Let's go. Did you have something to say about the EIVA match?
I think, you know, a couple of key wins for Jay, and as he moves into the conference tournament phase of this coming up pretty soon. And so, like, you want to be second, you know, if you can, you know what I mean? So then he gets a bye in the first round in terms of where he's at. And so, but I think him and Sam are going to play again, probably. That's my call, do you know what I mean? In the semis. And so, should be a good one. So,
well, Sam can't stay at Jay's house that weekend for sure.
Not that weekend.
All right, let's go over to the, westward towards the what we called mayhem in the Miva, and things kind of settle a little bit after this weekend, but let's let Dan go.
Well, we'll do mine last. I think you had some I mean, ultimately Ohio State, they split on their weekend, which was big. You saw them go 5 with McKendree. Squeaked that out in the fifth game. Jacob Pastor popped back into the lineup late in the match in game four and ends up hitting okay. But, you know, he's not fully healthy yet at the same time. But then you saw Ohio State drop to Lindenwood. Lindenwood got two big wins for them, which really jumped them up in the conference standing. And they're both at home, and they swept McKendree, if you remember, earlier the week before, and then they beat Purdue Fort Wayne in three, and then they beat Ohio State in four. And so getting hot at the right time for those guys, for sure. I think they got to travel to Queens next week, but that was pretty big. And then Loyola took care of Queens. I think Brinkerman was finally back in the lineup for them a little bit on the second match, which is their one of their main guys at the same time, but Loyola took care of business. And then at our place, 2 5-game matches. So Ball State won in the end, and then we were able to put it together on night two for our senior night, which is always great when you can win for your seniors from that standpoint. And so, but certainly big time swings and some great, great volleyball for us in our own house. And on Easter, we had a packed house on both games. So that was fun just in terms of having a good crowd, and always wonder about that over the Easter weekend. But yeah, certainly I'll let you guys talk a little more, but we had some good performances, and T is good as well. They still are without Patrick Rogers. Well, they're plugging in a couple pieces, but T's going to get his 20 kills every night probably in terms of that. So, but we had a couple guys step up, which was awesome. So,
all right. Any other coaches, questions for Dan or comments on the Miva or even Lewis?
With Lewis watching that fifth set, it seemed like Haber just found ways to kill the ball, especially early on, got you guys going. And he's been pretty consistent. I think he gets overshadowed a little bit by Max Rocky, but he's been playing really good from the end line and just kind of doing everything. I think he's a player, Dan, that was always good and kind of under the radar, and he's starting to find his stride now. So I think he's when he's on, you guys are really, really good and can beat anyone, obviously.
I would agree. It certainly balances us out. You know what I mean? So, and then the other guy is Siebert Roslam, who's kind of come out of nowhere a little bit, like, and he passes, serves, and I think he had 20 kills as well in terms of that second night. So
I like the way Dan Setter runs the offense. You know, when I watch him, when he started, you know, last year, what year is he right now, Dan?
He's junior, but we were doing that modified 6-2 for a while. So
yeah, he you know, he wasn't the star of the show, so to speak, but this year he's really come into his own. He distributes the ball well. He knows how to read blockers. You know, he knows who the hot hitter is. It's like he's got all the intangibles that coaches think that setters should already have from all their years of high school and club that they play. And we hope that coaches talk about, you know, finding the matchups on the other side and streaking the hot hitters and all that stuff that goes along with it. But he's just really doing a nice job getting in the right spots. The hitters look like they're in rhythm. And that, as a hitter, a former hitter myself, when your setter, you know, puts the ball in the same location, in the same tempo, you can get into a nice little rhythm with your approach. And he's doing a really, really nice job. And the Miva right now, holy smokes. I mean, we talked about it earlier in this year, and we'll get into it in a little bit, I'm sure. But I don't want to face anybody out there if I'm anyone. There's no clear favorite other than the record of Ball State. But that they are not resting, thinking they've got this thing locked in. Anyone can beat anyone out there right now. So kudos for Dan, though, and his seniors on senior night. That's always fun.
Yep. Yeah, I think one of the interesting things to add, too, is that Lewis on the weekend outpassed him and outhit him for both those matches. And, you know, I think in watching the match, they were a little bit – I thought Ball State was a little bit cleaner on night one. Lewis missed a bunch of serves, and I think that ended up being kind of the difference overall. But I thought Lewis outplayed him, and you know, you move this into a playoff setting, and you know, Ball State doesn't want to see anybody in this conference, but they definitely don't want to see Lewis. And I don't know, it was a great weekend for Dan. Congrats, it was a really, really nice victory, and a couple of really, really tough played matches.
Good stuff. Anything else to add, Brad? I think your mic went on, but
no. I just thought for Dan and Lewis and Ball State, like 10 sets of really good volleyball this time of year. It's good to be in those environments. It's good to, obviously you want to end up on the winning side of those, but it's good to have that high level competition going down the stretch.
Yeah, without a doubt. We're going to talk about two conferences that are unrepresented on the screen here, just to make sure that we give them some love. But in the SIAC, Fort Valley State undefeated at 6-0 in the conference, but closely behind Edward Waters College at 7-1. What do we know about these SIAC teams going into these final few matches of their season? Anyone want to take a stab?
Those are the two teams. Larry Rather at Fort Valley State has done such a nice job. But those are the two teams I think that you'll see in the finals. And listen, I know Fort Valley State's undefeated and I like their chances, but don't overlook Edward Waters. They're pretty good. They got a couple of pins that can bring some heat. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch because they're fighting for something now. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. Anyone else on the SIAC?
I mean, at Fort Valley State, Isaiah Fed is a stud. And with having him in that lineup, I think he's been pretty consistent for them throughout the year. And he's a really talented player, really good player. So, I think any of those guys can get hot and really make it an interesting match. Similar to last year, I forgot who King was playing. Maybe it was Ohio State, to where, everyone's rallying for him. And you got a couple guys playing really well. Where I think it was Warren Davis, the third from King, playing really, really well last year. I could see Isaiah Fed being in that role for Fort Valley State at the national tournament in a few weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the other piece, you saw Fort Valley State go out early in the year and play Pep, UCLA, USC, and I don't know. I think that gives them a little feel for expectations and level of play. And I think those are, even though they might have taken those as losses, those are key matches in turning about, making a program take the next step. So,
yep.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly what Dan said. If you look at Fort Valley State now and you look at the way that they're playing versus those early trips out west where they had to play some really, really tough volleyball, they're a better team because of it. And their team looks a heck of a lot more dynamic and a lot more fluid in what they're doing. So they're doing a fantastic job.
Yep. The other conference I'm going to mention here is Conference Carolinas. Belmont Abbey, 10-1, taking first. North Greenville at 8-3. And then you have a tie for third at 7-4 between Erskine and Mount Olive. Thoughts on the Conference Carolinas teams?
Don't overlook Mount Olive. They're good. I know Derek is doing some really nice things at Belmont Abbey, but Mount Olive's good too. Those three or four teams come the final weekend or two of the Conference Carolinas. That's going to be a really fun tournament to watch. Mount Olive is my dark horse. They got some guys. Their setter is really good. He's really crafty, a little bit smaller, but man, can he dish the rock. So yeah, that'll be fun to watch. If you're not watching it, you should pay attention.
Yeah. Anyone else? Conference Carolinas. Nope. Okay. Oddly enough, the other non-represented conference on the screen, the MPSF. Big couple of weekends coming up, and I'm sure we got a lot to say about it, but who wants to take the stab here? Jay was shaking his head, and Dan's contemplative pose there makes me want to go to him really, really quickly there.
Jay, go ahead, buddy.
we're going to learn this upcoming weekend who the top dog is in the MPSF, and I think everybody on paper says UCLA is the team that should be favored, and I'm not so sure that's the case. Grand Canyon only has a couple losses on the year. They continue to take business into their own hands. If you are not watching that match or those two matches this upcoming weekend, you are not a fan of men's volleyball. That is going to be the two matches that everyone in the country should be paying attention to because it's going to say a lot. Now, what do I think prediction-wise? I think there's going to be a split. I think they're going to be it's going to still leave some head shaking. But, the MBSF, Stanford and Pepperdine and BYU in the middle of the pack, and USC. I mean, those four teams, they're all really good. And UCLA and Grand Canyon are just a little bit above them in terms of maybe their approach to things. But nobody wants to face anybody in that conference either. And again, we'll talk about it later, but Concordia probably not going to do much this year, but I don't want to play Stanford. I don't want to play Pepperdine. I don't want to play BYU. I certainly don't want to play Grand Canyon. I certainly don't want to play UCLA. Nasty conference.
All right.
Stanford's an interesting thing. Like, you look at their record, they're like 9-11, 2-6 in conference, but ranked number 6 in the country.
For a reason.
Well, I agree. I'm just saying, it's just, if you look at them and you look at their record, you're, don't get caught up in that. I think, you know, I know they.
Oh, sorry. I was going to laugh, but Theo, what's the average age of Stanford starting 7?
312.
Total years.
Yeah,
huh?
We're not the oldest.
Well, this is the thing with Stanford's record there. They played a lot, like 4 to 5 matches without Will Rodman, and that's a big piece for them. So, you know, and he's back, and they're competing. But just like in the MPSF tournament in years past, teams can rise up. I mean, USC took some of the top 10 teams to 5 early on in the season. They've definitely got the firepower, and you can't sleep on them. They've got Wes Smith, that 7-foot freshman middle who looks like he's built like the Hulk, but longer. And, you know, Dylan Klein, who's consistently getting double-digit kills, hitting above 300. And then Jack Duker. I mean, who wouldn't want those pairs at the pins? So, you know, USC can't sleep on either.
Yeah, I think that you get that conference tournament first-round matchup, and who's kind of finds a way to couple wins in the bag as they walk into it, maybe in a pretty good spot for sure, just in terms of that. Because, I mean, BYU's got some of those pieces too. They're getting 2 wins against Concordia and in terms of where that's at. And so.
Yep. Well, the Western coaches. Oh, go ahead, Brad.
We have, so if Grand Canyon and UCLA split for Jay's prediction, which I think is very likely, then Grand Canyon takes first, which is huge. Where, you know, that loss early on in the year for UCLA comes back to really haunt them when it comes to those standings and the tiebreakers and all that stuff. And we know how crazy and convoluted those can get, as Dan knows better than anyone being in the MIVA. But that becomes crucial and really important, you know, getting that extra day and that better seating goes a really long way to maximizing our chances. And I think something that's been interesting with UCLA is in most of their bigger matches, they've lost the set, which they've been in control of most of the matches, but still lose a set. And when you get to do or die time and conference tournament time and national tournament, you know, if you're going to lose one set and then a team gets hot in another set and you're facing teams with equal or close to equal firepower, the stress and the pressure really starts to turn up and heat up. So with that being a trend of theirs, when you look at Grand Canyon, where, you know, we've talked about it before, they've just been so consistent and taking teams down in 3-0 most of the time. To where those are little pieces that could end up paying dividends down the road in the conference tournament and in bigger matches.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, guys. Like UCLA, you know, Andrew Rowan was fantastic this week. And those 2 victories over Stanford, I thought they were playing really, really well. And for Grand Canyon to have an idle week, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they look after taking some time off. And especially if they had some injuries, some things that were kind of bugging them that maybe they can get past. We all know those idle weeks can either be a real help or a real hinder in terms of you finding that rhythm again. And UCLA coming off of the way that they played, you know, Ethan Champlin hitting 391 on night 2 in that sweep. And Andrew Rowan playing the way that he did, I was just incredibly impressed with the way UCLA looks. So the MPSF is going to be really, really interesting. And that's not even to mention the fact that Pepperdine had a really nice win over SC. And obviously they go at it again next week, but that's kind of determining the center of the conference, and Pepperdine really securing that win and getting themselves a little bit of space. If they can get SC again, I think they kind of locked themselves into that 4th spot.
Yeah. Well, you know, we haven't mentioned is Merrick McHenry, who was error-free on night 1 of the UCLA-Stanford matchup this weekend, but also rising to the occasion has been Grant Sloan as of late. You know, he's in the top 2 productivity-wise, point-wise for UCLA, and there's some great social from some digital content creators of showing where he's jumping on the block and how high he's getting and just how aggressive he's been at the pin. So, you know, a little change up in the lineup. We're used to seeing Knight, Champlin, and other mix-ups at the outside, you know, as Zach Rama. But Man, that's a deep well to pull from for Sparrow, and I think he's dialing it in. And I'll be curious to see what happens this weekend. You know, where Jay's calling a split. Man, not a gambling. I don't bet on college sports, and I definitely wouldn't gamble on this weekend at all. It's just too hard to predict.
I wouldn't go all in, but I might match the pot for sure.
Well, let's move even more west. We got two Big West coaches on there, but I'd love to get their takes and what they're seeing in that conference and what could sort out. Let's go with Brad first and end with Theo.
Yeah, I'll start with Santa Barbara, Hawaii. So Santa Barbara was out at Hawaii this past weekend. I believe Santa Barbara lost in three, maybe four night one, and then ended up losing. They lost in three night one, then ended up losing in five night two, in a really close match and a really good, good battle. And Santa Barbara seems like they've gotten hit with more and more of the injury bug, and it kind of keeps getting Rick and the Gauchos and company, but they found a way, like we've always talked about, they are always going to be gritty and tough and grind out plays. And now with their new lineup and new outside hitters in different spots with Ben Court and Patrick Kane, not the hockey player, playing on the left, they've done a really good job of kind of getting back to almost like the Santa Barbara of old, where it's just outside hitters that are going to be scrappy, good in reception, good in defense, and then let Jess Bianchi go do work overhead on the right side. Really close match there, night two, which was probably in a really fun environment with it being the senior night for all the Hawaii seniors, fifth year and sixth year seniors and all that for Hawaii. So it was a pretty cool environment, pretty cool vibe, and really cool to see Rick and the Gauchos step up and really kind of give a really good fight to that Hawaii team that still doesn't look like they're fully in stride quite yet with what their new lineup's going to look like. Then for us here, we had our home and away with Long Beach State, and Long Beach showed me why they were the number one team in the nation. And they were really clean. They were really good. They served in over both nights at like 86%. At a ridiculous rate. And unfortunately for us and maybe for some others down the road, Simon Torwee really found his serve. And night two, we were battling and back and forth with them. And he went on a few service runs and really was a difference maker in a couple sets there from the end line. He's always been a difference maker with his block and with his attacking. I thought night one, we weren't super clean. We were a little out of sorts and weren't quite in rhythm. And then night two, we found our rhythm a little bit more, but just that consistent service pressure from them with their size, physicality at the net, blocking and great defense behind the block, it really ended up giving us some problems. And I think one X factor for them is someone we all know, but Mason Briggs is playing some really high level volleyball with what he's doing in reception to defensively. He's really got them all on the same page and all in sync in unison when they're passing the ball.
Well, Brad, they've kind of, Al Knipe has kind of shuffled up his lineup a little bit, because in the beginning we were seeing Lazar Buchkov, the freshman middle, and now you're seeing De'Aris McCraven, who's a stinking high flyer of the likes of Merrick McHenry and Toby Ezeonu. And then we're seeing Nathan Harlan in the mix now, and Al's like putting all these pieces in, and they're being just as effective as beginning of the year.
That's because he's got 85 guys on the roster.
And like, even just there, De'Aris McRaven, who was a junior college transfer from OCC and ends up working his way into the lineup. He's a physical freak. He's up super high, but then he's making some block moves that are unreal and great volleyball reads, where it's not just him being big and athletic and jumping well. He's making some really good volleyball plays. And then Nate Harlan, I think, you know, he's kind of grinded his way over his 4 or 5 years at Long Beach as just a really good volleyball player. I know he would even be a serving sub and set in transition for Aiden, to where now he's just passing really well, attacking really well, not making too many errors, putting pressure from the service line. And one little piece with Harlan is his dialogue on the court and just his interactions with his teammates. There's so much volleyball conversation there that I really think it helps keep that team so focused and so dialed in over time. Two additions to their lineups, for Lazar and for Clark, who are two great players as well, but definitely paid dividends in our two matches.
Yep. Let's go over to Theo, and then we'll have the other coaches chime in on the Big West happenings.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of continue on the San Diego Long Beach, you know, I think Brad kind of hit it all. And, you know, night one, they weren't quite as clean. And I thought Long Beach played really well. And Torwe was absolutely fantastic. And then coming into that second match at San Diego, I thought San Diego played great. I thought they played really tough. And most of those sets were incredibly close and really competitive. You know, Long Beach down the stretch, I thought their serving was just fantastic, especially in the red zone, right? Anything above 20, they were absolutely near perfect, where San Diego had a little bit of passing breakdown. But I don't know that it had as much to do with San Diego's bad passing as much as it had to do with Long Beach just serving the ball incredibly well, and just consistent pressure. Yeah, you guys touched on it a little bit, but McRaven really came to life as well. You know, I thought that Knipe did a really nice job. You know, we don't talk about him a ton on here as a setter, but I thought he really got him going, and especially his transition and out of system offense. I thought he was incredibly calm and set some really, really difficult walls and made them look easy, and found his middles, especially in transition, and caused a ton of problems there. And Torwe and McRaven are difference makers. Those guys offensively are crazy physical and attack the ball at a really, really high level. But again, I think the late serving was kind of the difference when those two went toe to toe at San Diego. But I thought it was really good volleyball and super high level. And then moving on to the Hawaii Santa Barbara, you know, I think Santa Barbara is, it's ridiculous. You look at their record, you look at what this team has done over the course of the year. And I still say they're one of the most dangerous teams in the West. And, you know, obviously they have Jess Bianchi, who's doing some incredible things. I think he had 32 kills in that 5-set loss. But I think they for sure could have taken that match away from Hawaii, and they were in the driver's seat to do so. And, you know, a lot of their success comes down to their setting and the consistency of where they're able to find that rhythm and kind of maintain a lot of that pass and serve consistency, which they've struggled to do most of the year. But I think, you know, if any set is close and Jess Bianchi is in the match, they got a shot. And, you know, we saw it against George Mason early on in the year. And he has continued that down the stretch. And then there was our match, you know, CSUN Irvine was really.
Don't downplay this, Theo. Don't just go, oh, and then there was our match. You know, whatever. It was just, you know, a match.
Look, it was an awesome weekend for us. And I think for Irvine too. You know, the first night was at CSUN. I thought our guys played incredibly well. And, you know, if for all of us who have put Haleer Heno in the player of the week constantly throughout this season, I mean, we all know what kind of player he is. You know, the lineup that Irvine had been going with Tangator and Heno on the left, that essentially dissolved on night one, and they lost a couple of sets, and Haleer Heno was struggling. I think he ended up hitting
0-0-94. Thank you.
He had 0-91 on the match. And we just did a good job containing him. He had a lot of those setting the ball over, tips, rolls, things that he does that are incredibly creative, uses his non-dominant hand in ways that I don't think I've ever seen in the collegiate game. But they just didn't fall. We ended up kind of touching and controlling some of those balls and kept them in play rather than those falling for kills. And our service pressure was really consistent, and it kept them out of rhythm. And we ended up knocking them off at home, and it was a really, really exciting match. And turn around, we head to Irvine, and trying to contain Haleer Heno back-to-back nights is damn near impossible. And he proved why he's one of the best players in the country. And he came out and hit over 400. Also, the adjustment of putting Flexton back in the lineup, and obviously that guy has been working on his serve receive and continuing to get his game better, which tells you a little bit about his mindset and mentality, not being in the lineup and when he got his number called, he came in and was really, really effective. Both those guys hit over 400. And I think we ended up hitting 330 as a team. And I thought we actually played some really great volleyball for stretches. Our two freshmen had a little bit of a hard time in the Brent. Both our libero, Chris Carnizes and Jalen Phillips, were a little bit off. And I think that had those guys been their normal selves, it's probably an even closer match than it was. But I got to tip my hat to Irvine. I thought they did a fantastic job bouncing back and taking it to us on night two.
Yep. I will just add as well that on night one, your team, the Matadors, were just functioning at the highest level. And Irvine was kind of stuck in their headlights out of spring break and finals, like, whoa. And they had no answer. When I saw the hitting percentage, I mean, Irvine hits 314 on the season against teams. They were held to 117 by our team, and you guys had 18 blocks or so versus 17. Irvine's 9.
Yeah, 17. So,
but I will definitely say your team can't sleep on the Matadors, because Kyle Hobus, I don't know what he's done. Maybe he's the rock star sponsorship or something, but he is flying higher and so confident swinging. But you know what's going to grab my attention is Donovan Constable. There was one rally in 5 points where he must have got like 5 to 10 swings, just aggressively hitting the ball as a setter and say, I don't care. I'm going at Flexen. I'm going at Darcy. Constable 6'1". These guys are 6'8 and 6'10". So, but I remember you looking back at me at the ESPN broadcast booth and smiling. He's like, got to let him swing.
So. Yeah, no, Donovan was electric. And honestly, coming off of the heels of what he did in Hawaii, where he was just as good and just as dynamic, I really feel like he's coming into himself as a volleyball player. And he's not afraid of anybody, right? And Rob, we talked about that a little bit before the match, but that guy wants to hit every ball. He was an outside hitter, and there's parts of our practice where he's like, Coach, if these guys are having problems, I can play on the left, just so you know, I'm ready. So that's who he is, man. And he's a dog for us. He's an absolute leader. He's doing a great job.
All right, let's let the other coaches, Jay and Dan, chime on in.
Well, listen, there are three setters in the country that I would – listen, I love my setters. I'm not saying I'm getting rid of them. But if I had a chance to have them in my gym, Donovan Constable is one of them. Connor Sheehan is another one. And I just, you look at the way that those guys play, and Nick Slight from Grand Canyon, you look at the way those guys play, they're just tough mother effers. And, you know, they bring something different to the table in each program, I'm sure, but there is no shortage of them doing this and getting their team fired up and doing the right things. And those three are really fun to watch. If you want to watch three setters, you know how to run an offense and know how to control the emotions and the stability of your team. Those are three setters you should watch. I think, you know, when you look at the Irvine Northridge match the first night, I thought Northridge handled their attacking really, really well. You know, Jalen Phillips, again, I think the last time I found out he was touching 18 feet. I think when he becomes more and more volleyball savvy, there's going to be nobody in the country that's going to stop him. He can hit a heavy ball. He can hit over the top of blocks, but he's still a young guy, and he still makes a few errors here and there. We're like, oh, if we only could control that just a little bit more. You look at Darcy at UC Irvine, 7-footer, and you're thinking, my God, this kid's going to just dominate. But even he, a young guy, makes a couple of swings here and there. We're like, ah, it's just, he just hasn't quite figured it out yet. But holy smokes, in a year or two or three, those kids are going to be dumb. But Irvine obviously handled business a little bit more fashion on the second night. But you look at the Big West, you look at the way Santa Barbara went into Hawaii and went 5 with them on senior night, low less. That's an emotional night that had they not pulled that out, that would have been a massive, massive bummer for them. I don't want to see anybody in that conference. They're all good and can get you on any single night. I mean, you look at, there are three teams right now in the country that are giant killers. One of them is CSUN, the other one is McKendree, and the other one is Lindenwood. Giant killers. And you want to see them in the first or second round of your tournament? Absolutely not, my friend. So congrats to Theo. It's a great signature win for them on the season. No doubt it's going to carry some momentum for them in the future. But, yeah, just fun to watch. A lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Dan?
A lot of good things been said. I want to throw up, so this is Coach's Takeover, Rob. So initial player of the year candidates, as we have this conversation, like each coach has got to pick a couple, two or three here. Like, and we know Hino's one of them. You know what I mean? I'd like, but I think this is like, I am not on the committee this year. Thank God. Do you know what I mean? But this is a tough category. I think there's, you know, Kyle Hobus, I don't know everybody's numbers yet, but the guy watching him play is just at another level. And like, we don't have Spiros anymore from Hawaii. Like, so when you kind of look at guys and you look at numbers and like, you know, there's a couple guys, I guess, that you can look in the MEVA conference, but do they have those upper level numbers that are National Player of the Year yet? I don't know. I think even our own conference, it'll be a tough category for the MEVA, but I want to get the coach's take on maybe a couple early favorites.
I love that question, Dan. That's a good one.
Well, can I just, before you guys go in your awesome discussion, I wanted to say this because I actually stayed up to watch that Saturday night match in Hawaii. And I'll tell you that there was not a dry eye in the house when they announced Spiros Hakas as the L2 and the starter, and seeing him with his crutches on the bench and just waving to the crowd. And hats off to that Hawaii crowd, man. They make you feel loved. But, man, that was such an emotional moment. And that would have been a big bummer if Hawaii dropped that five-setter. But, I mean, it was such a great night. So, with that, please do go on with the discussion.
I am on the committee.
I am the committee. No.
Governor, please.
I am not the committee by a long shot. I mean, it's obvious it's not a popularity contest, right? There's a lot of, you know, objective things that come along with it, and you know, there's some subjective discussions that happen, but I think you're right. I think in the beginning of the year, I think we looked at a few players that could be difference makers. I think Spiros obviously being one of them, obviously Hilaire being another one. I think people were looking at Van Buren, at Loyola as being somebody. I think people look at Pasteur as being somebody. And Rowan, I think, is somebody that people would look at. I think at this point for me, player of the year, it's got to be somebody that's consistent, right? And you look at Hilaire and he has unbelievable numbers. But there were a few matches where he kind of went away. And it's not necessarily that he was non-existent and didn't matter, but he was not at that consistent performance level. Doesn't mean that he's not going to be in the hunt by a long shot. There, I think easily you could put him in the top three and maybe in the top two should UCI continue to go down the road it is. But, you know, I like the way Rowan's running that offense. I think there's probably a couple of guys across the country that should be in the conversation, but maybe aren't. But, you know, the reality is I think for me to be able to take a team to the Final Four should mean something. And the Final Four this year is still up in the air. Nobody knows who's going to end up being in that Final Four, you know, matchup. And I shudder to think that we would vote for somebody based upon just sheer numbers, but doesn't lead their team to that echelon, so to speak. So, Dan, it's a great question. And I know Brad's probably going to have a whole bunch of numbers to talk about. So I'm going to give it up to him right now because I want to hear what he has to say.
Well, I partially disagree with part of your,
yes,
with Hino. And like, he's had what, two bad games? That's it?
Yeah, against George Mason.
Where was the second one, Brad?
I don't know. The North
Carolina was 5.5. He's at 5.5 points per set leading the country, and he is second in kills leading the country. Do you know what I mean? So he's pretty ridiculous numbers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, anyway. Don't make it sound like I think the kid's junk. Jay said that Hino's awful. Jay said, thank God he's not voting. I just said he had a couple of matches where he wasn't the guy. That's all I said.
Maybe top three where, like, he's the no-brainer for me.
France is going to outlaw Jay from visiting now.
But yeah, I see him as the 1-1, the S-tier guy. But where I think it gets really fun is thinking about some of the other options. You know, you look at the setting position. You know, you got there's a lot of guys who are going to be pretty good, but I think it'll come down to those top four teams. And you got Nick Slight, you have Andrew Rowan. And then you look at Long Beach, they're playing some really good volleyball right now. And something that could be interesting is maybe we see a player of the year from, you know, what ends up being the number one ranked team or could end up being around that range. And is it Aiden Knipe? Is it Simon Torrey? That'd be exciting to have a middle. Is it Mason Briggs? That'd be exciting to have a libero in that conversation, where it's going to be tough just because the numbers in all three of those positions, setting, libero and middle, are always going to be very, very skewed. It's tough not having a outside hitter or opposite being that guy. And really, you look at the other outside hitters and opposites now that Shakas is out and done, unfortunately. And I don't see a contender with Henna. Maybe Camden Gianni would be an interesting one. In the Miva, Pat Rogers, maybe, because he's had better numbers than Tianishi. So that's where it really gets intriguing. John Kerr maybe is someone that gets in that conversation, but I don't know where he's at across the year. But I think it's, I'd go Heno, Torwey, and Nick Slight, Andrew Rowan is the top four in my eyes.
Ooh, fair grouping for sure.
Right. You silence the crowd, Brad.
And you know, this is no slight against Mason Briggs. I think part of the committee's, you know, discussion points are what do you do to score points for your team? How are you scoring for your team? And there's no doubt Mason's the best libero in the country. And there's no doubt he's going to see the national team jersey at some point. There's no doubt he's going to go overseas and make a lot of money. He is absolutely fantastic and one of the main reasons why Long Beach is as good as they are this year. I think when you look at the scoring and you look at all the different things that hitters bring to the table and setters for that matter, that's probably the reason why those people are maybe in that little upper discussion about player of the year candidate. But that's not a slight against Mason. He is fantastic.
Yeah,
I got four guys in that spot that I think could be in consideration. And obviously seeing how this all unfolds, and you know, I thought, Jay, you made a great point about who ends up going the distance, right? That's going to play a lot of weight in terms of this decision. But I think Nick Slight, as of right now, is definitely in the conversation, right? I think they're the highest hitting percentage team in the nation. Andrew Rowan is definitely in that conversation as well. Hilaire Heno. And then the two guys that I think we didn't mention is Parker Van Buren, who I think statistically, you look at the hitting percentage for the entire country, there's a handful of outsides that are mixed in with the middles because the middles have that higher hitting percentage. Hilaire Heno is number five in the nation in hitting percentage. And the guys ahead of him are middle blockers. Shortly behind him is Jackson Hickman, who, again, another really, really high-hitting, high-flying outside hitter who plays the game at a really, really high level. So between those five guys, Slight, Rowan, Heno, Parker, and Hickman, you got five guys that are kind of just a tier ahead of everybody else. And where the rest of it all falls and how these teams finish, I think, is going to probably be the biggest deciding factor. But Hilaire Heno hasn't had more than one bad match all year.
The tough part on the committee is like they make their selection before the Final Four is decided.
That's now, right. 1 month from today, we will know the player of the year because Long Beach on May 1st is the All-American banquet.
It's a challenge. And I wish
at that point we'll at least have seen playoffs, right?
Well, what happens is so basically, you'll know who's in the tournament, but that call happens the week that Monday preceding the week before the tournament, or Tuesday or Wednesday. So like you know all the because it's really built off regular season stats and regular season performances, and you get to put conference tournament results into that a little bit, but none of those stats matter from the conference tournament when you come to All-American selections. And so that group meets and kind of uses all that data from that standpoint. So that certainly can sway the room. Hey, somebody got upset or, hey, is somebody injured or something like that? Do you know what I mean?
And this year it might be, I don't want to say easier. That's a slam against your teams. But, you know, with the Conference Carolinas and with the SIAC teams in the final eight, trying to get to the final four, I think it's safe to say you could whittle it down to six teams. So at least, you know, the person that you're voting for is probably going to be in that six. And then you could kind of, you know, you can have the discussions from there. They're all good candidates. What I'd be interested to see is off camera, so to speak, vote about who the most impactful player or players have been, even though their teams may not have been, you know, in the hunt, so to speak, even for a conference championship. There are at least a dozen that you could talk about from around the country. Are you talking about guys like Jesse Bianchi? You're talking about guys like John Kerr. You're talking about guys, where they just, Harrington being another one. I mean, there's a couple of guys where you just look at it and you go, man, they're just so good and so much fun to watch. And had a huge
Omar Hoyas.
Omar Hoyas.
Hoyas.
Yeah, there's guys that, you know, that should be in that conversation. I think Donovan Constable should be in that conversation. There's just, you know, just, it's just fun. It's fun to watch. And I'm glad this year there's some more parity because we're getting some more guys and some more teams recognized for the right reasons.
Yeah. Now, what is the, is there an official count for All-American selection, or do you just expand the honorable mention? I know we discussed it at one point here in the last year
12,
or so.
12 first team and 12 second team. That got expanded right before I left. And then honorable mention, kind of, there's not this exact number. The group, hey, says, hey, this is, I mean, you can't get like overly aggressive and have 60 guys, you know what I mean, or something like that. But there's kind of this floating number that there's been anywhere between 25 and 35, I think, in terms of that. And so I think that's up to the committee and what they feel like is a good cutoff and representation in terms of that. And so,
yep, some years it's larger than others. It's just a matter of where the cutoff point is number-wise.
And a lot, you can't see the national stats. So, like, you get to look on NCAA and look at overall stats and points, but the committee puts a lot of weight. So, like, when these coaches do this, your nominations come from your results against national ranked teams. So that list is expanded this year, which is great. So you get a little bit bigger pool of stats now in terms of who you're playing if you played a ranked schedule. And so you look at those numbers, comparatively speaking, to other players against nationally ranked teams. And you'll see some numbers get kind of bloated if against non-ranked teams. And so you got to weigh that. The committee takes those ranked stats pretty important in terms of that. So,
yeah.
And Dan, who are your picks?
Oh, I guess, yeah. Well, I would, Hino for sure. I think Rowan or Slight, as a setter, one of those guys have an opportunity to be in this. They play head-to-head. So what happens on the head-to-head battle? I am a Torrey fan. You know, like, having a middle in that group is key. I think we haven't had one like that. It's been as dominant. He's top three in blocks or second in blocks per game, and his hitting percentage is ridiculous. And so I don't remember what his kills per game is. So, yeah, I don't know if I have somebody from the MEVA. Like, Parker Van Buren's good. Patrick Rogers is hurt. But I think in terms of where, yeah, I think they're going to have a hard time just the MEVA player of the year, let alone is that guy in that category. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know that Penn State or the EVA has a guy that's in that same category yet. They have some really talented players. Omar's great. I think he's a player of the year candidate for them. Where's John Kerr's numbers? Do you know what I mean? And so, but should be interesting.
I think the other middle that I forgot to bring up, or two, would be Toby at Penn State. Yeah. His hitting percentage is pretty unreal. And then Merrick McHenry, which his hitting percentage has been down a little bit this year.
But what was the last middle? Was it Brad Keenan? What was last middle that was?
Wow.
PK
Leno.
So. I think so.
Back when you guys played, right, Theo? Was that back then? I don't know. Do you play
back in the day, man?
Before that,
the
middle's
tough. Like, can he? How? I mean, I think about guys. It's like Mitchum was a guy for us. I mean, Mitchum was almost at three kills per game, hitting 500. You know what I mean? You just don't see middles with the same weight carry.
They only play the three rotations. And yeah. I feel like it's such a disadvantage in terms of the stats and the honors.
Tough. So, but anyway, those are mine. So, but,
great coaches takeover topic, but is there, I feel like there's more discussion maybe here. And
Well, no? It's 10:57, and some of us got practice and film and all these things, buddy. Do you know what I mean? It's so
oh, funny. Gotcha. All right. Well,
yeah.
you know, maybe we'll do it next week, but then let's end with what we always – no, no, two things. Your players of the week. Brad didn't claim one early, which I'm surprised.
I don't think I –
but
I've
Theo's going to step in and intercept right there. And then we'll what you watching this week. So let's go with Theo since he got the handle.
I don't know that I've ever gone first without someone stealing it ahead of time.
Oh, hey, I got to go. Lindenwood is my team. I got Lindenwood as a team, and I got Kyle Holmes.
Unbelievable.
Theo, you're just too slow, buddy.
Hey, and that's fine. You can have Lindenwood. I'm good. I have Andrew Rowan, who I thought those two wins – over Stanford went unaddressed in terms of the volleyball community. Those were big wins, and I thought he played fantastic. And then I'm going to put up the two-headed monster, Hilaire Henno and Nolan Flexton. And I'm going to really give my best to everybody that has to play those two moving forward. You know, I hope you guys really enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to playing those two guys once more in the tournament.
Nice. All right. So Dan's got his, Theo his. Let's go with, since Brad didn't steal anything this week, let's go to him.
I got Tianishi, Mr. T, 20 plus kills both nights. Two good performances. Back to finding his stride.
Yeah. Wow. Just one. That goes over to Jay.
I got two. I'm going to give my first one to Donovan Constable, 47 assists on that match when he beat UC Irvine. My second one is Connor Sheehan, the setter for Lindenwood, 46 assists in their match beating Ohio State. Two setters that are maybe underrated when they first started out, but have turned out to be really, really nice players for both teams and a lot of fun to watch. A lot of moxie, and I like that.
I'm actually going to insert two of mine and me two Hawaii guys. One would be Guillerme Voss, night two against UC Santa Barbara. 12 kills, zero errors, 750, six block assists, 15 total points. I think it's a lot of reason why they were to eke that one out against the Gauchos on senior night. And I got to shout out to Spiros Hakas. I mean, you know, unfortunate injury for the season, but he's one of the most outgoing, good for the game, talented, and just a great ambassador for the sport of volleyball and the state of Hawaii. Because if you watch the stuff at Hawaii on senior night, they represent more than just the university. They represent the state. And that's what really caught my attention was the love and the aloha spirit that they have. So Spiros Hakas, Guillerme, great weekend. Hopefully it's not the last time I see. Actually, I got Guillerme twice this coming week. I forgot about that. But that brings us into our what you watching this week. Let's go reverse order, Jay.
Again, if you're not watching Grand Canyon UCLA, I don't even know why you're even a fan of volleyball.
I take offense. So, I'm gonna be in a match with another couple good teams. So.
You can record it if you want. I'm gonna be watching obviously Hawaii UCI. I want to see what Hawaii. I mean, they're scrappy now, right? Now they're kind of fighting for their identity again. I want to see if Hawaii can pull one of those out. The MIVA conference is such a cluster F of stuff. You got McKendry Ball State. You got Lewis Loyola. It's just going to be crazy. So I'm going to be watching those matches. But I want to see what CSUN can do against Long Beach. CSUN is a giant killer. Everybody pay attention to that team. They're not flying under the radar anymore. Spotlights are on them. I want to see if they can take one from Long Beach. That's what I'm watching.
All right, stoking the fire. Mason Briggs is listening. I know it. I got the messages from him. So that means he's got some fire for their next practice. Thanks, Jay. Let's go over to Brad.
I got, obviously, we have UCLA Grand Canyon. That's going to be a good one. Oh, the battle for Chicago. Lewis Loyola. And I got an idea for Dan. We get a pizza trophy, a deep dish pizza trophy, and the winner gets that every single year. And you guys can be just fighting over Pequods. That'd be great. And then I also think McKendree, Ohio State is going to be an interesting one to watch in the MIVA.
You yep. should get sponsored. This match sponsored by Lou Malnati's.
Illuminati's?
No, Lou Malnati. the pizza place. Come on, Rob.
They're doing Ray Strong Night for us at Loyola. So we did that at our game here. Hawks has been super gracious, and they're doing to do the same thing at them. Where proceeds of the tickets go towards the foundation.
Very cool.
Their men's basketball coach, Drew, and his wife, they had a little one that was a preemie. And so there's some connection there with that as well. So it's kind of cool just in terms of promoting that and everything for us.
RayStrong.org if you are so inclined to donate to micro preemies, and just check it out, RayStrong.org, which will go to Dan for his choice.
Oh, I thought I kind of jumped Theo, so I had to be last. So go ahead, Theo. I'll be last.
All right, I MPSF. I think that Pepperdine USC one is going to be interesting, and to kind of see where that middle of the pack lies right now. I think that'll be a really good one. And then I'm of course watching the crosstown rivalry games. The King of Chicago, Loyola Lewis, is going to be awesome. Can't wait to see that. And then NJIT Princeton, the crosstown New Jersey rivalry. I think that'll be a really good one. Super fun match right there. Thought I had one more.
Well, while you're thinking about that, why don't they name the Chicago series the Sausage King of Chicago, like in Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Abe Froman, Sausage King.
The Abe Froman Trophy.
No, that's it for me.
All right. Well, go ahead, Dan.
I don't know. Like, a lot of things I think the Harvard Mason game, Jay talked about they were home and everything. And right now Harvard's sitting right behind Mason in terms of their rankings in the conference, right? So that becomes a pretty big game. And so the other one, McKendree plays Ohio. I think somebody said it, though, but McKendree plays Ball State and Ohio State. Lindenwood goes to Queens. Now, you remember Queens split with Purdue Fort Wayne earlier in the year. So those have some pretty big implications, as well as we go to Purdue and then go to Loyola to wrap up. And so I think you talk about all these teams kind of sitting in the same space and who goes 1-1, who goes 0-2, who goes 2-0. That'll probably have some pretty big implications in terms of how the conference tournament layout that following week from that standpoint. So yeah.
Somebody get the bracket made because the Meva is going to be the first one. Somebody.
Yeah. Jay, you play Harvard twice at home, or is that a split away?
No, it's home, double home.
Yeah, nice to be home for that then.
That's right. Well, with that, that is episode 14 of the 2024 NCAA Men's Volleyball Top 20. Dan Friend of Lewis, Jay Hossick of George Mason, Theo Edwards of CSUN, and Brad Ross Stratter of UC San Diego. Thank you for your contributions this week. Great takeover. May need to do it more often because it's way better than what I'm putting together. So. But a lot of great stuff there. Good luck this week. And there's two more weeks of mayhem still happening in the Meva, but a whole lot more craziness going on all around the NCAA. So, gentlemen, good luck this week.
Thanks for listening to College Volleyball Weekly. Be sure to follow Rob Aspero at The Rob on the Mic on Instagram and at Rob on the Mic on Twitter.